Welcome to this edition of Team USASAC, a podcast dedicated to explaining and telling the United States Army Security Assistance Command's mission. One tool to accomplish the organization's mission is Excess Defense Articles, or EDA. But what does that mean? I'm Tim Hansen with the Public Affairs Office, and here with me to explain it all is USASAC's Chief Mission Support Division G3, Lem Williams. Lem, thank you for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
First off, Lem, can you just, in regards to the foreign military sales process, what is EDA? What is Excess Defense Articles?
Well, every year the Army goes through a force structure review. They'll decide what they need to do their warfighting missions. Once they kind of balance that, they determine what's excess to their requirements. Once those things are declared excess, they'll cross level and look at that within inner services, you know, Navy, Marines, see if the other U.S. agencies, and to include like Border Patrol, other things like that, United States government requirements there. If those things are not required, then it's declared not only excess to the Army, but excess to the United States government.
Okay, so speaking of excess defense articles, the EDA, can you kind of ballpark? I know you probably can't give me an exact because it probably changes from time to time, but what percentage of all foreign military sales would fall into EDA?
Like you said, it's an ebb and flow. It depends on what the Army's doing as far as its force modernization, what some of the other services are doing. But I'd say probably on average, we're in the 5 to 8%.
So a smaller percentage of foreign military sales, not the big large percentage.
We're a slice of it, but there's so many broader scoped type cases out there. We're just one of the multiple types of cases. It'd be like looking at a menu at a restaurant. I have an issue I'm going to look at. I'm going to do an outright buy, FMS sale. I'm going to do an FMF. You know, it's an appropriated funds type monies. And EDA is just one of those list of choices that the partners can then look at for us as to meet their requirements.
So if we're talking from the perspective of our allies and partners, if they're looking at that menu, I guess, why would allies and partners choose EDA over maybe new materiel?
Most of the EDA partners are, a lot of times, let's say, economically challenged. So they're looking at it's better for them. They get a product. In many cases, it's an operational product they don't have to put a lot of money into. By statute, they have to pay what we call PC&H, packaging, handling, transfer, that kind of thing. But a lot of times the partners will look at, maybe they want another bell or whistle put on that, you know, something for their particular needs. So they'll do those kind of things before the equipment ever ships, but they get it a lot more cost effectively.
And kind of what I'm hearing there too then, so even though maybe it's something that the U.S. government or military is phasing out, for these other partners and allies, it may be maybe new technology.
Right. And what happens is as we look at force modernization, new capabilities or better capabilities, if you will, for our forces, a lot of times what we're phasing out would be the same thing for our foreign partners. They're going to what might be, you know, an ox cart. Now they jump to a Model T, hence now to a Humvee, though we're going to the JLTV. I think as we evolve that, our divestment processes and so forth turn into their modernization programs. So we start linking those things up over time. I think it's better for both. Helps the U.S. forces divest the equipment more cleanly. They have, you know, from birth to death of a particular item with U.S. forces, they already kind of know where it's going at the end of that. So we start linking that with a partner in the out years. They're allowed to go, oh, I got the Humvee 2022. Well, life cycle of JLTV, what the Army's fielding now, is probably till 2060. So they know in 2060, I'm going to start probably fielding the JLTV into my force. That's their new force modernization plan.
Now, and I think you kind of touched on this with that answer. So the benefits to the U.S. Army in having allies and partners receiving EDA, Excess Defense Articles. I'm guessing there's some interoperability, things like that. Can you tell me?
We do those kind of things. We definitely look at that. We always look at that as far as from a fighting force. We don't want to give, you know, something that where our partners on the field cannot communicate, cannot operate with us. You know, in some cases with maintenance supply parts, that's not as easily done. But like with communications or identify friend or foe, those kinds of things on the battlefield will definitely, you know, aids us. And then the familiarity with U.S. forces to what is to them legacy type equipment, they're able to advise, help, and cultivate, capability kind of thing and maintain it with a partner.
Really a win-win situation for our partners and allies and for the U.S. government and U.S. military.
It is. If we can keep that stream of consciousness going in, and of course, we don't live in a vacuum, so there are these anomalies along with particular systems or partners, you know, geographical locations on things. You know, you may have a partner that, you know, they see an opening and they, oh, hey, I'd like that capability. And like I said, most of our partners that go EDA are grant type thing. So it's free, except for the PCNH, like I said before. But all of a sudden you go, oh, well, we kind of pursue a total package approach. So when you give it, I'm going to give you this free item, but now there's a sustainment cost, there's a training cost, and then those numbers get to be sometimes, particularly like helicopters or more advanced armored vehicles, it's going to be pretty expensive. So some of the partners kind of, well, I'm not so sure I need that capability right now. And it's because of a long-term enduring capability to sustain that.
I imagine there is a process, like if allies or partners wanted to request excess defense articles, kind of give me kind of just a real quick recap what that process would be like for them.
Okay. Countries are going to look, there's not a stated the right way, the wrong way, that, you know, different countries have different degrees of understanding of things. It can come in on simple as a sheet of paper, or, you know, it may be as thick as a phone book kind of thing. But with the details, it really just articulates what they're looking for. I need a rifle, or I need a truck, or I need, you know, a piece of armor, I think. And then they'll lay that out. And then we'll kind of working through with the CPMs, the ROs, and then back down through us. We'll work, okay, I don't have this particular item. Maybe if they ask for a brand name or something, I don't necessarily have that, but I have an in lieu of type item. So we then work with the partner to figure out, will that meet your requirements? And we'll kind of walk that through and mature that.
Has the EDA process always been this way? Or can you tell me kind of where we started maybe when it came around to where we're at now?
I've been here a little over 10 years. And when I got here, we were, scope of cases was more in the probably 8 to 10 a year. We routinely run about 100 plus cases at one phase or another now. And what we've tried to do is take it from a reactive type program to proactive. And when I say reactive, as U.S. forces would go through these force modernizations, they just consolidate all this equipment at Army depots. And then kind of, oh, we'll decide what we're going to do with it some time down the road. Well, some time down the road, in some cases, turned into years or decades. So you've got
slower, much slower.
Much slower. And then you've got, you know, some senior person is out there visiting a depot and trips over a crate of flintlock rifles or bumps their head on a Sherman tank. They go, oh, get rid of that. Now what we're trying to do is look, like I mentioned before, about these Army decisions for force modernization, which of course has cascading and divestiture. Then we look at those as opportunities to build partner capacity with viable operational equipment. I'll give you an example. If we have a truck and a motor pool at the 101st Airborne Division, and they get the word today, that's the truck they're taking to war. Next week, they're getting the new truck. So they're going to maintain this old truck until they get the new one. We're trying to time that up to where when it leaves the motor pool, the old one, I pick it up right then and try to expedite it in a much more timely manner, probably small single numbers of months now to do those transitions, but they get a much better piece of equipment much faster.
Yeah, I was going to say much faster. And then I know just from personal experience, if I had a car and I didn't start it for a year, I may have some problems, but if I can sell that car immediately to somebody, I know it's going to be running properly.
Right, and what we're trying to do, if it's running today, just like you said, we'll work with local maintenance units that are there on the base and develop letters of agreement and certainly compensate them for their time and so forth. But every 3-4 weeks or whatever, they'll go out and make sure the tires are blown up and the engines are cranked and that kind of thing, and cycle the equipment to keep it viable till we can get that transition program. You know, we still have to do our normal paperwork process, congressional notification. Those kinds of things happen, but we're getting the source of supply that's much more viable and much more economic and timely for both the Army and for the partner.
If there's just one takeaway for our listening audience out there, what do you hope they take away from excess defense articles?
I think that current EDA, predictive proactive EDA, is a viable program. It's a much more timely program. This is viable operational equipment, combat power, and capability developing for the partners.
Lem, I just want to thank you for joining us today. And it sounds kind of like we just kind of scratched the surface. So if you would be willing, I would love to get you on in future podcasts to maybe dig a little bit deeper into this EDA process?
No, absolutely. It's not a one-shoe-fits-all type process. There are certainly different facets of it. You know, we could drill down on particular issues and so forth, but glad to be there.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, and we appreciate you giving our listeners an inside look at what Excess Defense Articles is, how it plays into the bigger mission of USASAC. And I want to thank all of you that tuned into Team USASAC. As always, if you want to learn more about the United States Army Security Assistance Command, just visit our website at www.army.mil/USASAC. You can find the link in the description of this podcast. Until the next time, for Team USASAC, I'm Tim Hansen. Thank you for listening.